Iku Iluna, please rise. Ohea oko eko ka aha, inahe kuliana imua okea aha ho o kolokolo ki ike hanahano oko moko aina o Hawaii. Inaoi mai, e malio mai, ilohi ia kaleo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. Inoho ilalo, please be seated.
Morning, please call the case.
Case number SCWC-22-0000690, State of Hawaii, Respondent Plaintiff Appellee versus Koa Kaʻakimaka, Petitioner Defendant Appellant. Arguing for Petitioner Koa Kaʻakimaka, Herman Heimgartner. Arguing for Respondent State of Hawaii, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Charles E. Murray. Argument on the merits.
Morning to you all. Today's proceedings are being broadcast live on the Judiciary's YouTube channel and also on Olelo. I also want to welcome and thank Judge Kevin Souza from the First Circuit, serving as a substitute justice with us this morning. Counsel, are you ready to proceed?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. I understand you're going to have 30 minutes and 5 minutes reserved for rebuttal. Sorry, yes, sir. All right. And then you have 30 minutes as well. When the yellow light goes on, that'll indicate you have 5 minutes left. Right. Please proceed.
May I please the court? Good morning, Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii. I am Herman Heimgartner, and I represent Koa Kaʻakimaka in this case. In its summary disposition order, the Intermediate Court of Appeals gravely erred in its disposition of the sufficiency of evidence and issues of the jury instructions. As to the issue of the sufficiency of the evidence, the Intermediate Court of Appeals gravely erred because the state failed to present sufficient facts to support a guilty conviction at the jury trial. Mr. Kaʻakimaka, in this criminal case, was charged with one count of violation of privacy in the first degree. The plain and unambiguous language of violation of privacy in the first degree under Hawaii Revised Statute 711.1110.98 is that it requires a person to intentionally or knowingly install or use a device in a private place. The words "in a private place" and "in that place" refer to a single location that the defendant or recording device, along with the complaining witness, must have both been in as an attendant circumstance of the crime. The evidence at trial established that the defendant was outside of the private place when he used his phone, the device. The evidence at trial established that this incident occurred at a vacation rental property in Kohala on the Big Island. On the date in question on that morning, my client and his boss were landscapers at the property tending the lawn. They were landscape workers paid to be there. Inside the house, there was a complaining witness that was taking a shower. The evidence established that the shower had two small windows high up on the wall, jealousy windows.
Can I ask you this? What's the ambiguity with the statutory language "in any private place"?
In means inside.
What's the ambiguity with that, if any?
There is no.
Okay. Why did you need the instruction number 5 then? Because part of your issue is that the instruction should have been giving further definition. If there's no ambiguity, why would that instruction be needed?
That instruction was needed because the jury instruction I asked for was needed to avoid the jury from being misled.
How would they be misled if "in" is unambiguous?
Well, during the trial, the state presented its evidence and its argument. And their argument was that using the phone outside constituted a crime. In the closing argument,
it'd be a crime under 711.1111. but not under the statute that he was charged with.
That's... I also ask for a lesser included under 711.11.11, one of the subsections. One subsection was given, but I also ask for subsection 711.11.1b, which I refer to as the quote-unquote the Peeping Tom subsection. But my concern with asking for the jury instruction to define in a private place was not the concern that it was ambiguous, but that I wanted the jury to be told that in means inside. So when they heard the state's argument and the charges, the entire case focused on this, the state was adamant that the phone being outside could constitute the crime. If a jury instruction was given to the jury to tell them in means inside, especially with the facts of this case, then I believe that they would have reached a correct verdict. They wouldn't have been misled to think that a phone being outside of the house would be sufficient to sustain a conviction.
Was there any argument that the outside area, because it was 6 feet or so above the window was located 6 feet off the ground, it was under the awning, that somehow constituted a private place? Was that argument made during the trial?
I don't believe that was made. I think that argument about private place would more pertain to quote-unquote like search warrants, those type of issues. Regarding privacy in this statute, the privacy focuses upon people, personal privacy where they can be undressed and so forth. The outside of the house where landscapers were working was all, and there's photos that were submitted as the memorandums, the outside of the house was obviously not a place where a person would be undressed.
I understand your argument. Thank you.
You know, circling back to the Chief Justice's question, I mean, you answered it framing it from your trial court arguments, but in your supplemental briefing, you noted that the trial court should have given an instruction defining in, and that suggests that you think that there was ambiguity. So if the meaning is clear, why would you then, even in your supplemental briefing, say that the definition should have been given?
Well, I definitely believe this definition should be given, but my focus was to let the jury, that they wouldn't be misled. I don't think in me arguing that the instruction in should have been focused on there was ambiguity, the intent of asking for that instruction was to make sure that the jury clearly and explicitly know that they know when deciding the facts of this case that they would decide it correctly.
I see. So somewhat of a clarifying, let's be crystal clear, this is not ambiguous, but jury, here's a little extra push or aid. Is that what your position is?
Correct, because in closing argument, I wasn't arguing the facts. I argued essentially the issue of the law, which presented here, in means inside. So that clarifying instruction would have been important so that the jury is crystal clear in deciding, in fact, they're a trier of fact, that when the prosecutor was arguing that the phone and the defendant being outside, that was incorrect. That the instruction should have been absolutely clear for the jury to decide correctly the issue. By not giving that clarifying instruction, the jury, you know, with all respect to the jury, I believe made the wrong
counsel, if I may. Well, it seems that the ambiguity is apparent from the decisions on appeal. I mean, even at the ICA, there was a disagreement as to whether the phone needed to be physically in the bathroom or not, right? I mean, there was a sufficiency of the evidence issue addressed by the ICA in the first round. And I think our footnote one was mistaken on that. But the majority found that the phone being outside was sufficient evidence under this particular offense, whereas Judge Hirooka's dissent disagreed because he thought that it needed to be within the bathroom area. Isn't that what occurred at the ICA?
I agree that the ICA, that basically there was a different opinion on at the ICA level. But just because ICA at that level, the justices there disagreed, I don't believe that, you know, de facto now creates ambiguity. I don't think there's an ambiguity. The language is very clear. Just because ICA had a different opinion, I don't think that means that, or that establishes, that proves that there is an ambiguity.
Geez, I thought you would want an, I thought you were arguing for an instruction to clear up what it meant, what the offense actually requires.
Well,
isn't that what a jury instruction is for?
Well, the jury instruction was, my request for the jury instruction was to clarify what right. it means, and also so that the jury wouldn't be misled. The state argued during an entire trial, essentially, that the phone being outside of the house was sufficient to for the crime to happen. Whereas I asked for that instruction so that the jury would be clarified and wouldn't be misled by the state.
Understand that. So let me ask you this. If the court were to agree with you that a jury instruction were required on your point, what should happen then? Should we just remand it back for a new trial?
Yes. Obviously, it would depend on what the decision would be regarding the sufficiency of the evidence.
Do we need to reach sufficiency of the evidence at that point?
Yes, it would. But if it be just a basically reversal on the jury instruction, then it'd be, I think, remanded for a new trial.
But if there's sufficiency, is there a due process violation and double jeopardy issues?
Yes, so if the court would decide that there was insufficient evidence, then I believe the proper remedy would be a dismissal with prejudice.
Right, because if the court finds that the instruction should have been given, it should have been defined as inside or within, then you're not saying your client should be retried on that, are you?
No, I also believe there's sufficiency of the evidence. There was insufficient evidence.
Because it was undisputed that the phone was outside the window.
Correct.
No one was disputing that. Yeah.
So I would agree that there should have been a jury instruction and also the sufficiency of the evidence. The state didn't show that it was inside. It should be essentially overturned on both of those points. But obviously if the case gets overturned, the verdict gets overturned on the sufficiency of the evidence, then there wouldn't be a retrial because essentially the facts of the case would be decided.
I understand. Thank you.
And then if I would also briefly touch upon one other issue that hasn't been discussed, and that is my request to also have the trial court give a lesser included instruction. Under 7.11.11.10, there's a number of subsections for violation of privacy in the second degree. My request that was for the trial court to also give a instruction under subsection B, which is that when a person peers or peeps into a window of a dwelling of a structure for purpose of spying or invading another person's privacy for a lewd or unlawful purpose. Now, that instruction wasn't given by the trial court because the evidence at trial showed that the defendant held up the phone. He did not look with his own two eyes through the window. But I believe that argument can be made that peering, what he was doing, was conduct under that subsection.
Well, wait a second then. That would then contradict your position that the case should be dismissed for sufficiency and it ends. If you're saying there's an included offense, then it should go back and the trier of fact would look at the included offense. Now, it strikes me if you look at 701-109-4, you look at the two offenses you're talking about, the elements of the greater offense does not require peering or peeping into a dwelling adapted for a sojourn or overnight accommodation with a lewd or unlawful purpose. I mean, peering and peeping is eye-based observations. It's broader. There's no device. That synonym's out. And the dwelling is that requirement's a lot narrower. So I'm not sure that this is a lesser included offense. And I'm not and I'm wondering why you'd even be arguing it based on your position earlier on what we have just said.
To touch first upon whether it's lesser included, Section 701.109 of the HRS basically codifies what are lesser included, and there's three subsections. The first subsection is about whether it's established by the same facts. The second is about amendments. The third one establishes lesser included for things that are less serious, less culpable. I would say that under that subsection, that basically the peeping Tom subsection, violations of violation of privacy in the second degree, would be a lesser included, even though it has some different facts. Certainly, just
not different facts, different elements.
Different facts or established elements, but I believe that because it will be even with the different elements, I think under subsection C, because it's less serious, less culpability, that it could fall within that. If the court would, if there would be an.
Okay. I thought you were suggesting 711, which is invasion 2, the lesser was the peering, the peeping, B.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, wait, are you also suggesting subsection C as well? Was that.
C.
That makes clear that's outside a private place as opposed to in.
Yes, I have to check. I'm arguing for B, the peering. Because I believe essentially what the facts of this case were was a person spying through a window with his phone. Now, I think one of the things about that is, had he been up, down, had he been by the wall and used a mirror to look inside, that undoubtedly would be peering. But these days with phones can be used to, you know, as a mirror, you can look in a phone, fix your tie, you know, that type of a thing. I was at a sporting event. I used my phone to basically zoom into places. So I think the use of a phone could arguably be considered peering in the way he did it.
And at trial, you also sought an instruction on a lesser included of subsection E in 711-1111. I think that's what Chief Justice Devens was referencing in terms of installs or uses outside a private place any device for recording. So why does that not apply here?
May I quickly start?
Please, yes. Again, we're in the statute now that deals with violation of privacy in the second degree.
And
I'm referring to subsection 1E.
I can answer that. And subsection 1E basically deals with audio devices.
Right.
So.
No, it says recording.
For, I believe, hearing, recording, amplifying, or broadcasting sound originating in the place.
Under 711-1100, recording includes a videotaping or filming. So my question simply is, what you argued for that lesser included. I'm just curious why you are arguing the lesser included is the peeping subsection as opposed to E. You just don't think E applies.
Yeah, I've always interpreted subsection E to be basically audio recordings. If someone audio records, because it says for hearing, audio recording, audio is not in there, amplifying or broadcasting sounds.
You skipped over recording.
Yes.
Isn't sounds the operative word here? The hearing, recording, and amplifying and broadcasting all relate to sounds. Isn't that your argument? That's why it's audible?
Yes. So that's why I'd have to check, but I don't believe subsection E was requested because it wasn't, you know, audio.
I thought you requested it. It was a requested instruction.
I'd have to go back and check.
Okay.
Check on that.
I checked the record. Thank you.
And then you also got the word audible in E, don't you? Audible outside. So that's why it suggests that that relates to audible versus visual recordings, right?
Correct. And so I think basically with the facts of the case, it was with violation of privacy in the first degree and second degree, there's a number of subsections. And the facts of this case were somewhat unique. And I think the error that the state made in charging is, or on proceeding, was that essentially the facts of this case didn't fit in any of these subsections. And I don't think anyone would disagree that it was bad conduct to do what the defendant did, and that certainly people may feel that, oh, some crime may have occurred. But I think the mistake was that with the facts in this case, the state essentially tried to force basically a square peg into a round hole. The violation of privacy in the first degree would have required the facts to be that he was inside, or the device was. Under the violation of privacy in the second degree, there's a number of subsections. Subsection A deals with trespassers on property that trespassed for surveillance. But he was allowed to be there, so it didn't apply. And so in this case, the facts just didn't fit into clearly into the subsection, certainly not violation of privacy in the first degree. And I believe the remedy for that would be for the legislature to look at that, and they can amend the statutes to determine if this conduct under what subsection or statute falls when. If the court doesn't have any further questions, I appreciate the time given to me today to make my argument for my client. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Murray.
Good morning, Chief Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, defense counsel. In this case, I think the court has already heard kind of the big issue here. Is the jury instruction recommended by the defense for installs or uses in required? If so, then I would submit that yes, the defendant's right. There's no sufficiency of the evidence with respect to violation of privacy in the first degree if the court finds that that instruction is required. I would argue that instruction is not required, and thus the sufficiency of the evidence is also established. The jury, 12 members of the community, they looked at the charge given to them by the court, which mirrored the statutory language. They found the defendant guilty. They found installed or used in, specifically used in this case, the device.
What's the in, though?
The end is
that seems to be the push point, at least for me.
Clearly, and I would argue that if the legislature intended for in to equal inside completely, and understandably, as the defense has argued, they would use the word inside, but they didn't.
They did distinguish right in 711.11.11. They said installs or uses outside, so they seem to understand what in and outside.
They use the word outside,
distinguishes,
but not inside. So I think that indicates a difference.
Well, and what's the definition of in? Isn't it inside, within? Isn't that the ordinary plain meaning?
Within a perimeter or location, I think, is what I read in Merriam-Webster's.
Private place.
Yes. And
clearly what was outside was outside. That was not private because they were allowed to be there.
The physical location of the phone, yes, Your Honor, was outside. But a phone, the nature of a phone, the nature of a camera, is such that it can peer in to places that the device is not physically present at.
Which no one is disputing.
Correct. And I think the legislature, when they updated violation of privacy in the first degree, I believe it was in the early 2000s, they took into account the fact that cell phones had become ubiquitous and that cell phones were developing the ability to have cameras. And they adapted the statute to reflect that. So I think it's fair to imagine that they also understood that the phone didn't have to physically be installed in the private
place. We have to go with plain meaning as well. We have to find ambiguity. The defer from that. So I'm just trying to figure out what's the real ambiguity here with in versus outside, which the legislature used both words in different contexts.
And I think there is definitely ambiguity. And I think you can see that because the ICA split 2-1. I think that does matter.
I'm not so sure the ICA explained why it had an issue with in. It just talked about the instruction, but I didn't see a real explanation that went further than that.
I think they could have done better probably explaining their differences.
I'm not saying that. That's just what I read. But
And I'm also not so sure if appellate courts disagree with each other or a jury makes a particular finding that that alone suggests ambiguity. I think an appellate court needs to review the text and look at things. And your review of the text or our review of the text, I mean, it seems like the legislature chose these prepositions in any private place, in that place. There's two prepositions there. They throw in therein for good measure. That seems to be three locational anchors. And all those locational anchors are pointing in, inward. So I'm just wondering, following up on something that Chief Justice Devens asked, is, you know, how has in suddenly become out?
I don't think in becomes out. It's the use is the key. They differentiated clearly between installing a device, place, which installing means the device is fixed inside, versus using in, meaning the device is used in such a manner that it is able, that it's seeing into the location. And I think that's the key difference. I don't think they would need to distinguish. In fact, before they amended it, there was no distinguishing. It was just installed in the private place, from what I remember. And I think the fact that they clarified that it's installed or used in meant that they didn't think that it had to be.
When I'm talking about the three anchors, I mean, it just seems like those prepositional phrases are totally locked into the verbs. The verbs are being installed or used. And those prepositional phrases tie back into that, and that just seems like it's grammar 101.
Perhaps. I'm not a grammarian, and so I'll take your word for that. And
I mean, that's just syntax and that's grammar, and you got prepositional phrases and they're relating to the verbs, and that in it just seems like your suggestion is that the in means out and it's not bounded by space or that locational anchor.
I think it's bounded by the intention of the use. The use in means the camera, the device, whatever it is being used inside a private place to peer into the private place. I don't think it's...
So what about a telephoto lens?
Telephoto lens, I mean...
You're saying that this would cover a telephoto lens.
I think it could if it's used in a manner to peer into a place it otherwise wouldn't be able to view in. I mean, to give an example that's easier to understand, a restroom stall. Most restroom stalls are not completely enclosed. They have openings at the top. They have openings at the bottom. If a camera were installed not in the ceiling, but just on the ceiling, peering down into the restroom, the bathroom stall.
Isn't the restroom generally a private place? In a restroom, wouldn't that generally be in a
I wouldn't place? Say the sink area or the place where everyone's drying their hands is, because there's multiple people, there's traffic coming in. It's the stall itself that's been found legally to be the private place in most jurisdictions.
So it'd be okay to record people washing their hands or brushing their teeth in a public restroom?
I don't believe that would violate...
Or putting on their makeup.
No, I don't think that would violate the violation of privacy in the first degree based on the reading of the statute. But obviously in the stall itself, it would.
Counsel, if I install a Ring camera on the side of my house because I've had a problem with break-ins, and that Ring camera happens to catch a portion of my, let's say my neighbor lives really close, portion of my neighbor's bedroom window or bathroom inadvertently, am I guilty of violation of privacy in the first degree?
No, because you lack the mens rea.
What about drones? What about a satellite?
Well, I mean, obviously a satellite's outside the purview of most common citizens.
Maybe a venue issues, I don't know. But, we can create or craft, you know, as many sort of examples as we can. But I just keep going back to the text. And I mean, isn't in bounded by the space? And if the legislature in the misdemeanor offense, I mean, it clearly it knew how to write outside. And you mentioned the amendments and the 2004 amendment, but it's been amended like six separate times, and it seems like there's never been a particular tether to require anything outside. And then, it's almost like I say, hey, the keys are in the drawer. Does that mean the keys are... If I'm pointing across the room at the drawer, that they're not in the drawer? I mean,
I think in that example, you're right. The keys being in the drawer would have to actually be in the drawer. But that's, again, the difference between the keys and a camera. The keys are of no use to anyone if they're not actually in the place that they're being used. I mean, a key doesn't open anything. It doesn't project capture light like a camera does.
Okay, but that's why we have sort of in as being the prepositional tether to the act.
I think we're seeing it differently, yes. I would say that if you're looking at the statutes, we have to look at the plain meaning. I understand that's the precedent. However, there's other precedent, there's other case law that says you have to consider them not only in the light of precedent and legislative history, but also common sense. That's Gaylord. And Taylor, the court said, whatever may be said of the rule of strict construction, it cannot provide a substitute for common sense, precedent, and legislative history. We cannot construe in a vacuum. And I don't think you can construe this statute in a vacuum. I think you have to consider legislature said.
Yeah, and I appreciate that argument on a vacuum, but if you look at 1110.9 and then you look at 1111, it says installs or uses in any private place, and 1111 says installs or uses outside a private place. So how do you reconcile those two? Are they inconsistent, or the words mean something else? So legislature seems to have used those words in two different contexts, both criminalizing those acts.
I would say that the 711, the violation of privacy of the second degree, is talking about a different result, a different circumstance. It's not...
Circumstances being outside.
Yes. Well, more than that. But
what's the more?
I'd have to look at it again to really refresh myself on it.
So at trial, the defense requested the lesser included, but I'm assuming you did not agree to a lesser included instruction, correct?
I would have to go back and check the records. I didn't try the case.
And, we do have case law saying if there's insufficient evidence of the crime for which the defendant is convicted, but there's clear sufficient evidence for a lesser included, then the court can order a conviction on the lesser. But is there anything here that could qualify as a lesser included here?
From what I recall, no. I don't believe peeping and peering qualifies as a lesser. He didn't use his eyes. He used
right.
the phone.
Right, and the installs or uses outside is only for hearing, for auditory
right.
broadcasting sound. So the legislature could easily fix, if this court were to determine there was insufficient evidence here under these circumstances because it was outside, the legislature could fix it. Could create a new statute to allow for this type of situation and or a telephoto lens or a drone used to peer into people's private places.
Thank you, Justice, for reminding me of what the outside portion of violation of privacy in the second degree entailed, because it actually reminded me of my point. The legislature did indicate that installing a device outside for the purposes of audio recording, or recording sounds, was a violation. They didn't make the same distinction when they talked about used in a private place for visual recording. I think they understood by separating those two out that a phone, even physically outside a private place, could be used inside the private place to peer in. It
includes peers and peeps would include using a phone.
I don't think peers and peeps includes using a phone. I think peers and peeps is the eyes.
I understand.
Which is why I think the legislature doesn't need to create a new statute because they already did. They understood all this when they drafted violation of privacy in the first degree. They said in their committee reports that they're necessary to regulate inappropriate uses of technology that would violate a person's privacy. They didn't mention anything about the phone, the device, whatever, being physically in the private place.
Except it says in a private place.
Aside from that, but when they're talking about their justification for this statute, for the changes to the statute, they are emphasizing the need to protect people from technology that allowed people to peer in and record things that their eyes otherwise couldn't.
Well, they just in 2004 just talked about the cell phone. And I'm looking at Act 83, and that act removed the phrase, or uses any such unauthorized installation. And then what it did was it substituted installs or uses or both in any private place. So if the legislature really was responding, it seemed, to cell phones being used from outside the window, why preserve that prepositional phrase in any private place?
Because the phone is still being used to view and record in the private place. It's the recording. It's the observation. What the phone is doing is looking into the private place.
But that was what was then placed in, and what was taken out was or used any such unauthorized installation. So I guess I'm sort of having a hard time understanding why the in any private place covered the outside when they made that legislative switch in 2004.
I think they had enough foresight to understand they couldn't conceive what technology would become in 10 or 15 years. But we have drones now, for
instance.
Yeah,
I know, and they did mention cell phones, so that was, you know, somewhat prescient, but they didn't say anything about the location anchor except saying in any private place. And as we've sort of been bantering about, the classic Black's definition or Merriam-Webster definition is in any private place suggests inside.
But the definition of use means to put into action or service, to carry out a purpose or action by means of. So I would argue that the use of the phone, as I've repeated, and I know it's probably getting tiresome to hear, the phone is used to view and record in the private place. So I think that matches it. And I mean, this isn't a legal argument. This is a common sense argument. I think if you ask anyone off the street, they're going to tell you that the actions the defendant did meet the statute, because they're going to see that as what it means. The viewing through a window 6 feet off the ground into a shower with your phone and recording it is a violation of privacy.
You know,
Counsel, you know, sorry, I'm going to drag you back to my Ring camera example. Under my example, I gave you my reasons for installing my Ring camera. Maybe my neighbor feels like I'm using it for different purposes, which would put my mens rea in dispute. Isn't it a logical reason then why the legislature stayed away from a law that would prohibit the use of these video recording devices outside because of the example I just gave, where it would be too difficult in that scenario to determine whether somebody put a camera on their house for legitimate security reasons or because they're trying to peer into their neighbor's house. Isn't that a reason why then the legislature would stay away and limit then the law only to devices on the inside?
I think under your hypothetical, it wouldn't be the first potential crime that the legislature had drafted that could leave room for a defendant to claim an innocuous purpose.
But I'm asking you a specific question. Isn't that a reason why the legislature then crafted the language of this statute the way they did, to limit it to devices inside the private place or in a private place?
If that was the case, then why did they leave the gap of device is used in this manner, because it doesn't fall under any of the other subsections of violation of privacy in the second degree.
I grant you there's a gap, but I'm just asking, wouldn't that be a legitimate reason why the legislature would be concerned enough not to expand the law in the way you're suggesting, where it's a device outside looking inside?
I would think that if the legislature was had that much foresight, then they would have also covered circumstances such as this, in this case, where a device is used from outside to peer in and record someone who doesn't want to be recorded and who's not consenting to it in a manner in which a casual observer would not be able to. This isn't a Ring camera fixed on your patio that happens to look in the direction of your neighbor's six-foot window.
I got you. But in promulgating a law, the legislature has to take into account, or I would think, all scenarios that would be encompassed or caught up by the particular crime that they're promulgating. So I'm just putting that out there as a consideration.
I think perhaps you give too much credit to the legislature, as some of the case law has shown in the past. But I think in this scenario, what you're talking about would be a factual determination made by the jury, which is why we have our jury system. They would hear the facts. They would hear the explanation possibly from the defendant and the counter argument from the state, and they would have to piece those things together and determine, was this intentional? Was this directed to peer into something that otherwise a casual observer would not be able to peer into? And I think in your scenario, I would imagine the jury might come out differently than they did in this case, where there was a window, a small window that was high off the ground looking into a bathroom.
Counsel, are you still maintaining the position that that area where the phone was, that specific area 6 feet off the ground, could be construed as a private place?
I believe that is true, too. I do believe it could be construed as part of the private place, the same private place even as the bathroom. They share the same roof line. The window itself, in a sense, is part of the bathroom because the window is a ventilation for the bathroom. It's kind of a specific issue maybe to that specific house. And my house, for instance, I also have a window in a similar place above my bathroom, and I have no fan to vent. So the window is the vent for the steam from the bathroom. And I imagine this is the same scenario in this case, at least from the pictures introduced at trial, it appears to be. So I would argue that that window location is a private place. It's the same private place as the bathroom. It's connected by the same roof. It's one structure, basically. Now, does that mean, I mean, I don't think you'd have to shove your hand through the window to violate the statute. If the legislature wanted that to be the case, they would have mirrored the definition for unauthorized entry into a motor vehicle, where we talk about entry in Ferraria or Feria. But that's not what they did.
You know, looking at the entire statutory scheme with regards to first degree and second degree violation of privacy, it almost, I mean, what it sounds like is we're talking about peeping and peering with a technological boost here. And what you're suggesting is that, okay, we've debated the in and out part of it, but why would the peering and peeping with your own eyes be a second degree crime as opposed to use of a device? As you're arguing, peeping through a window with a technology assist be a first degree crime. I'm trying to reconcile all of the different circumstances that the legislature was trying to address, but also putting very different penalties on these situations.
I think the based on the legislative history and some common sense, the use of a device, first off, it's a higher degree felony in this scenario because you're going above and beyond just using your own eyes. You're using something else to enhance an ability you otherwise may not have, which fits in perfectly with the facts of this case. The second reason is because a device is usually capable of recording or capturing the image. It's not the same as, like, if I look in, then I have the memory, I have the image seared maybe in my mind, but that's it. I can't share it with anyone. I can't manipulate it. I can't use it for other nefarious means other than my own gratification, let's say. But when you use a camera or phone or some other device to peer in and to record, you're enhancing your own abilities, first off, in a way that you physically on your own couldn't. And second, you're bringing into play the possibility that you're capturing the image, you're capturing the sound, you're capturing a recording, a video, whatever. And I think those were the factors that led the legislature to conclude that that kind of behavior was worse than just using your eyes.
Is it the state's position that 711.1091A, the charge here, intentionally and knowingly installing or using in any private place, would that include observing and recording through a telephoto lens?
I believe it would depend on the circumstances, but if that was the intent to observe a place where you otherwise would not be able to with your own eyes, then yes, I think you're using that telephoto lens in a private place. You're using it to capture sound, record, or capture images in a private place.
So that would, the answer would be the same for using a drone camera.
Yes. I think the legislature, obviously in 2004, they didn't, the last time they amended it, we didn't have drones, not like we do now. But I think it would cover drones today because that was the intent and the spirit of the law when they passed it and when they amended it. I don't think they need to add drones. They haven't. And drones have been around now at least for 6 or 7 years, commercially mass-produced drones, and they haven't amended it to include drones. That makes me also think, using common sense, but nothing legal I can point to, that they view this statute as covering drones today.
How does that relate to your position about the structure and the roof overhang and the windowsill? I mean, you're now saying that things outside that roof line could comport with the statute.
I think it's a Russian doll of an argument, really. In this specific case...
A what argument?
A Russian doll argument, like the smaller doll inside the bigger doll, right? In this case, the smaller doll, this specific area is still part of the private place. Bigger argument, even using a drone, for instance, in an outside shower that doesn't have a roof, would qualify as a violation of privacy in the first degree. And if I have nothing further to, if there's no more questions from the members
Thank
of
you.
The Supreme Court, thank you.
Thank you. I have really nothing to add that I didn't address during my initial, except that I think this statute is plain. It's unambiguous, it's explicit, and I think the statute's plain and obvious meaning should be given effect. And I would ask this court to overturn the Intermediate Court of Appeals summary disposition order and the verdict that was reached in the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your arguments, counsel. This matter will be taken under advisement.
Eku Iluna, please rise. Iaka. Ka aha ko polo polo ki eki hano hano ua a koa koa ho maila. This Honorable Supreme Court is now recessed.